As usual, the castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
Our castaway this week, ladies and gentlemen, is the ex-racing driver and builder of racing cars, Raymond Mays. Ray, are you a musical person?
Yes, I am a musician. I'm very fond of music. I don't play any instrument. I play the piano a little once, but never having had time through my career, I don't play, but I love music.
You play records a lot?
Yes, a lot.
What would you want these 8 records to do for you on a desert island?
To bring back memories through the years of all sorts of incidents, sad ones, pleasant ones, and all the rest. That's why, really.
What's the first one?
Well, the first one is Roses of Picardy, and that means a lot to me because it was played in its heyday when I was with Grenadier Guards and went out at the end of the 1418 war when I was 17. The Guards band played it. It's played everywhere, been played since, and it's significant that I happen to have won on the ERA car the Grand Prix of Picardy on 2 occasions. Therefore, it means a lot to me.
Yes. Who's playing it on this record?
Well, Fred Emney, superbly, in his own inimitable way, and talking the words very sweetly.
Roses are shining in the hush of the silvery thing. Roses are flowering in Picardy, but there's never, never a rose like you.
Fred Emney. What's your second record?
Love Will Find a Way from The Maid of the Mountain, sung by Josie Collins.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Oh, because that means a terrific amount to me. I was taken to see Josie Collins when I was a schoolboy by my parents at Daly's Theatre. She made a terrific impact on me with a sensational appearance, the black hair, the flashing eyes, the superb voice which sent shivers down my spine. And during the run of The Maid of the Mountains, I might add, from my school days through my days in the Guards, my days at Cambridge, I saw it 84 times. So I know if I could tell you today the opening bars and the end bars, I think, of The Maid of the Mountains. And I saw Josie in it every time. And later, in that year, she became a great friend of mine, right up to when she died. And I shall all be a terrific admirer of hers.
In the fall, my friend, I'll stay. No fate can fill me with dismay. Love holds the key to set me free, and love will find a way.
Josie Collins. Ray, I believe your father was a motor racing man before you.
Yes, Roy, he was. My father's a pioneer motorist. I think that probably set the seal on my keenness, but I was always mad about motor cars. And even when I was at school at Arundel, I didn't pay enough attention to work. I waited for the autocar and the motor to come out to read about the races. Yes. But my father did. He ran, he had a Napier, which was a great car in those days, and a Vauxhall. Mm-hmm. And he ran these in local competitions in Grimsthorpe Park.
You were racing at Brooklands as an undergraduate?
Yes, I was an undergraduate at Cambridge when I first raced at Brooklands. I had my first win there, which meant a lot to me.
Yes. What happened to you when you came down from Cambridge?
Well, officially I started my father's business because I had to earn a living. But at the back of my mind, I was determined to motor race somehow or other. And finally I managed by hook or by crook to buy a Bugatti, which was then a very fine racing car.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on that Bugatti and another one that I sort of really did make my name in motor racing.
Now, the motor racing scene in the 20s and 30s was dominated by the continental countries.
Yes. In the 20s and 30s, it was dominated by the Italians and the Germans when they came back again after the war when they were allowed to race. And right up, of course, into 39, when the Germans really did dominate. And, I mean, they knocked the Italians out by then.
Yes.
They had the best drivers, and, of course, they were subsidized by the German government, vast sums of money, and it was used, apart from anything else, as a propaganda weapon.
Mm-hmm. You became the number one works driver for the ERA, the English Racing Automobile.
That's right, yes.
This was a light car.
This was what they call a Voiturette class, yes. It's 1.5 litre.
Yes.
But this little ERA just set the seal on motor racing, and we raced all over the world, and we did very, very well on it, and it created a great impression, I think, for England, this little ERA did.
Yes. And at the outbreak of war, you were the number one racing driver in the country, and you had a dream of a British Grand Prix car that would wiped the ball.
Yes, I'd had that dream for some time, but it was sort of, it sort of brought home in full force to me when I did a motor racing tour of South Africa in the RA and the Grand Prix of Johannesburg, East London and Cape Town. And I followed the German Auto Union team, which had been there the year before. And as I say, it frightened me and shattered me the impression that had been left behind of the might of Germany in engineering. And, of course, the Germans, the days of Hitler, they used that to the full. They were trying to intimidate, without any question of doubt. And the motor racing weapon was a very good way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold everything connected with engineering round the successes of their motor cars.
Yeah.
And that made me more keen than ever to say that we need to do something.
Well, the war came along and stopped you doing anything about it for a few years. At this point, I think we'll break your third record.
Mm.
What next?
The third record is I Love the Moon. Well, now, that's a record which means a lot to me, because I love the tune, I love the words, and it all reminds me of Phyllis Dare, a great musical comedy star who has been for a long while and still is a great personal friend of mine. And that song was written by a fellow called Paul Rubens, you obviously know of, Roy, who wrote many musical plays. And he wrote that song dedicated to Phyllis. And it brings back very happy memories of the tune and the person I know.
Played by Russ Conway. Now, Ray, the war was over. Motor racing was starting up again. What happened?
Well, Peter Verfum, who had been with me for many years, who had designed the RA, had worked with me since he came out of the Air Force at the age of 19, he had, in the meantime, sketched during the war designs of what we would like to build after the war if we could find the money.
Mm-hmm.
And his idea really turned out to be what was the V-16 BRM, which was the original BRM.
How did you get the money?
Oh, that was a nightmare. I repaired a sort of a white paper, and I got the names of various industrialists, Roy, all over the country, people I thought might be interested. And in this paper, I said, surely now is the time to wave the British flag, to show what we can do. Well, I had letters back, some rather despondently saying that now wasn't the time, rather defeatist attitude was upset me. But equally, I had two very nice letters back. One from the person who is now Sir Alfred Owen, who then was Alfred Owen, boss of the vast Rubraine organization. And the other one was from the late Oliver Lucas, with an equally big firm.
Mm.
They wrote me letters that cheered me up. And they said I could go and see them, put my case to them. And they were the first two people to support this all-out British effort.
Yes. Now, were there the right people in the country with the right experience, designers, engineers?
Oh, yes, I think that, because I've had quite a bunch around me in the RA days and from my motor racing career.
Yes.
I had every faith in Peter Burton. And also with engineers of the caliber of Harry Mundy helped us, who is now Big Bird Jaguars. Walter Hassan is a Big Bird Jaguars now. People like Eric Richter and Frank May, all first-class head draftsmen and engineers.
Mm.
I had no question of thinking we could not do it from that angle.
Yes. Now, this wasn't just a matter of one chap at a drawing board. I was amazed to read in your book that there were 25,000 hours in the drawing office went into that car.
Yes, it's quite fantastic, Roy. One doesn't believe it. It originated in Peter Burton's house in London. We were having two draftsmen plus Peter. Then we collected them together when we started at Bourne. And they sweated blood day in, day out for the drawings of this V-16, this very complicated bit of machinery.
How did it do in its first race?
Well, it was called a fiasco. It was very bad luck. We had a great driver, a French driver, Raymond Sommer, who drove it to Silverstone. But very unfortunately, the pot joint, which is part of the drive shaft at the back, broke through faulty material. And it never started in that first race.
In fact, you had hard luck for a season or two.
We did have hard luck, but you must remember, Roy, it was a very, very ambitious design. And even to this day, it still could be called futuristic.
Yes.
We probably aimed too high too soon with too little money.
When did the car eventually justify itself?
Well, The formula ended too soon. Quite frankly, I think the Italians were a little afraid that we were going to succeed. We had to run it in what I call the formula lib races, but the great day when it justified itself was when, to my mind, the greatest driver in the world drove it, and that was the great Fangio and the Grand Prix of Albi, which was a big race then. And even this was 1953, the year of the coronation, and he put up an epic performance. And, I mean, he was just definitely quicker than Ferrari, quicker than anybody. He lost the race, having won the heat, through the terrific speed of the cars and tyres giving trouble. But, I mean, anybody who saw that race will always remember it. And to this day, people talk about that race, showing what the BRM could do.
Well, that must have been a good day for you after, what, 7 years of hard work?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it lifted us up into heaven almost.
Let's have another record.
Over the Rainbow, yes. Well, now, that tune means a lot to me personally. It brings a lot of sentimental memories back to me. And also, I was so impressed when I first saw the picture of The Wizard of Oz. I'm afraid I rather like these dreamy fantasies and all this floating through the clouds. And hearing Judy Garland, when she was very young, sing this song, again impressed me, I think, forever. And I shall always remember it, always pleased to hear it.
Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me. Somewhere.
Judy Garland. Now, the BRM eventually won the World Championship Series.
That's right, Roy, 1962. Mm. And, of course, a great year of joy for everybody with Graham Hill.
Yes.
Let me say this. Graham Hill, I think, helped to us to win the World Championship, and we helped Graham Hill to become the great driver that he is still.
Now, looking back on your own driving career, which race do you think back on most?
It's awfully difficult, this, but I suppose you always have a favourite race to think about. Yes, I think possibly the one that I look back upon is when I won the Eifelrenner, the Nürburgring in Germany. And as you will know, the Nürburgring is one of the most exacting and exciting and difficult circuits in the world. 14.5 miles round in the Eifel Mountains with every type of corner. And I ran there as number one driver on the RA, and I managed to win this race after several battles with the late Dick Seaman, foreign drivers on Maseratis, and to receive the checkered flag before a crowd of something like 600,000 people. Yes. Roy, is always a thrill.
Let's have record number five.
I can give you the starlight. Well, now, there's another thing that's bringing back memories to me just before the war with Ivor Novello's Dancing Years. Ivor I knew and admired. I loved his plays. Mary Ellis I knew. In fact, sometime my mother in the days during the war used to send eggs to Mary Ellis when she couldn't get any. I always remember that. And I think I can give you the starlight. It's the most lovely tune, lovely melody and lovely words. And when I used to go to Drury Lane to hear this, Mary Ellis had various numbers to sing. Sometimes this was cut out. But whenever I went, I sent a little note round to her dressing room to say I'm in the audience. Could she possibly sing it? And she always did.
I can give you
Ellis in the Dancing Years. What's number six?
A Stranger in Paradise is a tune that I loved. I loved Kismet. I loved the singing of Doretta Morrow and Richard Kiley. I liked the melody. I liked the words. And it's often played, as you know, throughout the world on orchestras. And if it isn't played, I think wherever I am, I often ask them to play it. And it's one of my favorites.
Stranger in paradise, and the tell you.
Stranger in Paradise, sung by Doretta Morrow and Richard Kiley. You mentioned your travels. You must travel a great deal.
Yes, Roy, I do. During the racing season, you're constantly traveling, you see. It's nothing but packing bags, unpacking them again. The rather nice part, from my point of view, is that I go to a lot of places where I was racing myself, now going as racing director of BRM, knowing the race organizers, knowing the friendly people, knowing the people in hotels, the managers, the staff. And it's almost like going from home to home.
Yes.
And because one loves that.
Well, now you're traveling to this desert island. We know you're a good man with an engine. Have you any skills for a desert island?
I think remarkably few.
Put up a hut?
Well, I suppose I could. I'm not very good at building anything. I have to do something, but
cultivation?
My father had a small firm of fertilizer manufacturers. I suppose I know a little bit about that, but I don't really know what I should do about growing crops.
Fishing?
Well, I don't fish either, but I have to fish with my hands.
Well, now, what are the chances of escaping?
Well, I should think, knowing what I could do over there, the chance of escape would have to come first. not being a brilliant swimmer, I couldn't swim any ocean. I couldn't have a pair of binoculars. I couldn't take everything, but I should be looking out for a boat to come as near the island as possible to get away as soon as possible, I think.
Let's get back to music. Number 7.
Tea for Two. Mm-hmm. This, again, brings back many memories to me by a very, very favorite artist of mine, Benny Hale.
If you meet upon your knee, just tea for two and two for tea. Just me for you and you for me alone. Don't hold you near, be a peer, a friend or
Benny Hale in a song from No No Nanette. And we've come already to your last record.
Well, I love the Merry Widow music. And I adore June Bronhill's singing of the Merry Widow waltz. And I think Flaha is my favorite composer. I saw him once. Joseph Collins appeared in a play, one of her last musicals called Frasquita by Laha.
Yes.
And it had the most lovely music in. And Franz Laha came over for the opening night, and I was at the opening night at Prince's Theatre. Now, I always remember, because Laha was brought onto the stage with Joseph Collins, and you could hardly see the artist with banks of flowers which went almost up the top of the curtain. Yes. My only glimpse of Laha, but I adore his music, and I always adore the Merry Widow.
Bronhill in The Merry Widow. If you could take just one of the 8 records you played us, which would it be?
It's awfully difficult, Roy, but I'm afraid I should have to say Love Will Find a Way by Josie Collins, The Maid of the Mountains.
That means most. And you saw that 84 times.
84 times, yes.
And one luxury to take with you.
It's difficult again. I've been thinking hard about this luxury. Well, not liking either. I can't bear getting wet. Much as I love sun, you can have too much, that I know, and I think my luck should be an umbrella.
And sunshade.
Yes, exactly. Definitely. And I've got a nice large one which I take motor racing, which you can hold over the bonnet to protect them from when they're changing plugs. So it's a large blue umbrella.
Right. And one book, assuming that the Bible and Shakespeare are already on the island.
Well, that's again difficult. I shouldn't not take a motor racing book because, without being conceited, motor racing is in my brain, and I know it from when I started right up to today. Theatre I know and love, but I mean, I still like reminding myself of it and looking who played in what year. And I think I should take a book called Gaiety's Theatre of Enchantment by McQueen Pope.
Right. Gaiety's Theatre of Enchantment by McQueen Pope. And thank you, Raymond Mays, for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
No, I've loved it, Roy. I love talking sugar. It all brought back lovely memories to me, too.
Good. Goodbye, everyone.